Hey listeners, it's Tim. Can I just grab a quick minute before the show starts? As you've probably heard, Top Music Live, our dynamic two-day in-person conference for music teachers, is being held in Sydney during the Term 2 Australian school holidays over the 15th and 16th of April 2026. Our presenters have now been announced: Dr. Anita Collins, yours truly, Elisa Milne, Samantha Coates, Rebecca Stewart, Mark Matthews, Paul Myatt, Amber Hammond. The list goes on. It is an incredible lineup, and I just cannot wait to share this experience with you. This innovative event is unlike any other conference you've attended, unless you came to Piano Pivot Live in 2020, of course. We'll have amazing keynotes, interactive workshops, live on-stage teaching demonstrations, and opportunities to connect with fellow educators, all in a welcoming, relaxed atmosphere with full catering. See the complete two-day schedule and book your ticket now at topmusiclive.com.
This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
You will always have mixed ability levels. I teach a pair of twins. They don't even progress exactly the same.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to Season 4, 2018 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. My name is Tim Topham. Thank you very much for tuning in. You're listening to episode number 146, and a very special welcome to my Inner Circle community members. This podcast, of course, is your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. And in today's episode, we're going behind the studio with an Inner Circle member and teacher who's been making huge changes in her teaching and business, including forming a company structure, adding group elements, and hiring new teachers to take on students in her primary school teaching role. It's pretty cool, and I can't wait to unpack this story with you today. Today's show notes and full transcript are available now at timtopham.com/episode146. My guest today has also offered to provide an amazing freebie download for you guys. It's a really comprehensive outline of the skills that my guest today is going to be sharing with you that she expects of her level one piano students. So they're the foundational skills for the first 3 to 6 months of piano lessons. And it's kind of like a checklist. And we talk about this in more detail towards the end of the interview. And I know many teachers are wondering about ways that other teachers plan and track student progress. So Amber's actually giving away her plan of how she actually tracks student progress in those first 3 to 6 months of lessons. And it's actually a seven page download. It's amazingly comprehensive and will be a great resource for any teachers that's looking to see what others are doing in regard to keeping track of those students when they first come in. So we'll talk about more of it on today's episode, but if you would like to grab that free download, then just head to the show notes page, timtopham.com/episode146, and you can grab that straight away. My guest today has been teaching music for the last 15 years. She has a Bachelor of Music in Classical Piano and a Diploma of Education in Secondary Music Teaching. For several years, she worked as a classroom music educator for both primary and secondary schools, all the while continuing to work as a private piano teacher. She now owns and runs her own two-person music studio, teaching 50 students of her own while employing and mentoring a second staff member, and we'll unpack exactly how she did that in today's episode. She is currently undertaking a Master's of Music at the University of Sydney, researching collaborative small group teaching methods for the private studio. Welcome to the show, Amber.
Thanks so much for being here. Excited to chat.
Well, we've connected a few times, both online, or a number of times but also in real life when I came to Canberra and did a bit of a workshop. So it was great to, I actually got to teach some of your kids and I had an absolute blast.
It was brilliant. They're still talking about you.
You have such a great little crew.
Tim. Oh, that was so good. I have to say that was, we've actually had a couple of professional development through the year, and both times we got kids involved, and getting to see you and other presenters actually work with the children and completely different side of you. Like your presenter side is totally different from how you are with kids. We're all the same. And yeah. I loved seeing that. It was my favorite
art. Yeah. It's something I really enjoy doing. And I did it at MTOC this year as well. I did a live teaching demonstration, just working with kids on this. So it was like a non-masterclass, because I'm not a massive fan of masterclasses generally. But this was, yeah, taking the kids, let them play something and then pull the piece apart and have some fun with it. So that was great. I love seeing other teachers teach. So happy to do it again. Let's talk about that if you would have me back.
I think we should always have that, because see it in practice, not just what we're talking about.
Exactly.
How it works with the kids.
Well, let's start with a bit of a rundown of your studio as it is today, because we're going to unpack your studio. We're going behind the scenes of your studio, both past, the present, and also the future. But let's start with where it's at today. So numbers and ages, are you teaching groups, individual? Whereabouts are you in the world? People have already heard your Australian accent, I think. And are you do you offer exam programs or more contemporary? I'll hand it over.
Yeah, so well, at the moment I'm sitting at about 50 kids, and they range, well, I haven't taken on any new lilies for a while, so I've probably had five-year-olds, but they're now about six or seven now. And I go all the way up to 17-year-olds I've got at the moment, almost 18, and then I have an adult student as well, but mostly primary high school ages.
Yeah. And groups or individual?
Yeah, I do a lot of weird things. We have one-on-one lessons, obviously still will always be part of my studio for certain students, but I teach a lot of pair lessons now, which is lovely. So two students come together and they stay completely engaged from the start to the end of the lesson.
Right.
So that's a little bit different to hybrid lessons, the type of lesson that has been talked about quite a bit. Crossover lessons and buddy lessons are also called. So, you know, when you have one student come, another student comes, have a bit of crossover time, then that other student leaves and you have the solo time with the other student, that I teach as well.
Right, okay.
And I think that's started gaining popularity because it is so easy to schedule.
Right. But that's not what you're talking about with pairs lessons. So pairs is actually a group lesson with two kids.
With two kids.
Yeah.
I have actually in the past tried threes and fours as well, but I just found through natural attrition and problems with scheduling that they were more difficult to sustain.
Right. And are they similar age kids, or do you do it by ability?
I've mostly in similar by age and ability, but I found up to a year and about a grade in ability apart works fine.
Right.
And that's because of the key aspect of those lessons is they both still learn their own one-on-one repertoire.
Right. Okay. So there are two instruments?
No.
Okay. Okay, so look, I wasn't going to dive into this now, but let's unpack this, because people are going to be going...
No, you need to, because it's something that people go, what? Well, I can't do that. I only have one piano. In fact, I did a survey as part of my study, and there were so many comments about studio size and number of instruments. And one of the teachers commented, I can't do group lessons. I only have two pianos. And I was like, I have one. So there's just a bit of a misconception about what can work and what groups can look like in your studio.
So go on, unpack that briefly for us.
Okay, you've
got two 8-year-olds. They're about the same level. They're both sitting next to each other at a piano. Go.
Well, we don't even start there. Anyway, they walk in the room. First off, I generally do some kind of activity that's often away from the piano. I really value oral skills, so we always usually start with some kind of listening activity. It might be one of those wonderful music games. I do it up front because once we get to the piano, we start doing repertoire, we start doing a creative project together. The time just goes. And I find if I don't put those important, you know, oral skills and things right up front, we don't do them. So we do that first. And then usually what happens is we have a bit of group time, which does look like two kids sitting at the piano. I might get them. It's a bit different for every group. We might be focusing on technique. And so we might be working through some exercises from a book, and we do them together, and we talk about, you know, beautiful technique and what you should be doing and all that sort of thing. Very easy to do with two. at the piano, especially if they're little. Mm-hmm. And then we might do some group composing or right. some kind of improvising activity, or they might rehearse a duet if they're working on a duet. And then we move into, we usually call it like one-on-one time or something like that, which is where they observe each other play their solo pieces. They perform for each other.
Right.
Yeah. And that's with the little ones who can't sit for too long and not be actively involved without doing anything, they might accompany each other on percussion instruments. They might sing along, might keep beat. But for whatever age they are, I give them something to do. So for even for the little students, I might say, okay, well, you need to watch her rhythm and you're going to give her feedback at the end of the piece and check that her rhythm was really correct or her steady pulse or something was correct. And then they give each other feedback, which you have to train them to do.
Yeah, you would.
You have to, I don't know if it's an Australian thing or a human thing. We really pick up mistakes real easy.
Yes.
Straight away.
So do you do the Oreo or the hamburger feedback idea where it's a good thing, a bad thing, and then a good thing?
Kind of. I usually just say, okay, you have to at least say one specific thing that is going well.
Right.
Because they'll go, oh, it's good.
Yeah.
But you did this wrong.
Right.
So if you don't tell them to be specific, we're great at being specific with our, you know, criticisms. Mm. We're not very good at being specific with, well, I really liked how steady that was. I loved how you shaped that phrase.
Mm.
That's working really well. But let's look at these other areas.
Great. And so are these half-hour lessons or 45s?
I would never teach a peer lesson in a half an hour. They're always 45 minutes,
yep.
60 minutes. I even have my advanced kids doing 90 minutes.
Wow, two at a time.
Two at a time.
Yeah. Well, it almost becomes more like ongoing kind of masterclasses, and the group learning would be great, I would imagine, for more advanced students too. And they would get a buddy that they can hang out with, and that would be kind of fun if they like that person.
They love that. I've got a pair of older girls, and they did the hybrid lesson, the crossover lesson with a previous teacher, and eventually it's morphed into these 90-minute fully engaged sessions.
Right.
Which I should mention, I'm not advocating getting rid of one-on-one teaching, because that's so important for taking a student to an advanced level with an instrument.
Yeah.
And I do build in flexibility into those peer lessons. So if a student has just got totally stuck, or they just really need some one-on-one time, then we just turn the lesson into a hybrid lesson. And I'm like, okay, you're going to go and work on some theory. Then we're both going to have some, you know, one-on-one time. They're all in the room together, but then we may split if we need to.
Yeah, got it.
Originally, I was like, no, we're never going to have one-on-one time. We're just going to be fully engaged all the time. Unfortunately, that doesn't. If you need the flexibility, because
yeah, absolutely.
It's going to work.
when I hear about what you're doing and the way you explain it, flexibility is the one word that comes to mind. You must, if you're going to try this, you've got to be flexible. And I mean, from me and my perspective, flexibility is the key to engaging any student, really, and taking them both where they want to go and also appealing to their current interests. So congratulations. It sounds like a great little idea.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that people, you'd be more than happy to answer more questions about that, obviously in the inner circle, and potentially when you share some details about what you're studying and also how people can
connect
with you later on. So great idea.
Happy to do that.
I would love to just go back to when you first started teaching, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What was your studio like when your very first few students? Did you know you were going to be a piano teacher and you're like, okay, this part of my house is piano lessons, or did it just kind of evolve?
No, I decided very strongly in year 12 at high school. Up till then, I wanted to be a vet. But then my parents were like, yeah, cool, whatever you want to do. And then in year 12, I suddenly went, no, I have a burning desire to be a teacher. And then eventually, English teacher or music teacher? No, music teacher. Music all the way. Why? That's going to be the best. Very glad I made that decision. And I didn't decide to be a vet, although I'm sure that's great. and so I decided on that and went to university, because I decided I don't want to be a music teacher until I've pushed myself a lot further.
Right. Okay.
Study music, and then eventually also a diploma of education. So my first studio was actually half sort of piano teaching and half working in schools.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I got my start in schools too.
Predominantly. Yeah, but I was always doing both.
Yeah.
Sometimes both at a school, so I would be teaching the classroom lesson, also taking some one-on-one lessons as well. But weirdly enough, even at that time, those group teaching experiences didn't impact my studio lessons for quite some time, which looking back is like kind of odd, really.
Right.
Was very much two totally different things.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed certain aspects of classroom teaching. So that eventually did influence me to do something different. So, yeah, I had about 30 kids and was working at a few schools for a while, but mostly one-on-one traditional lessons.
Right. And it sounds like it's only more recently that you've tried these new ideas. So we'll talk about that in just a moment too. I'm keen to know as well, you've been an Inner Circle member for about a year now. Mm-hmm. Let's fast forward from when you very first began to about a year ago
when
you joined the Inner Circle. Can you tell us what your studio was looking like then so that we can discuss some of those changes that have happened in the last year?
So I was starting, I think it was about 3 years ago, I started getting into the partner lessons, buddy lessons and things. And then yes, I did join the Inner Circle. A big part of, I think, what has happened since then is the practical ideas that I've been able to take from learning. I learn really well by watching others. So the fact that you can see videos, it's like, I don't know, picture paints a thousand words, a video is even better. So getting to instantly take those ideas, and because you do a lot of creative teaching, Tim, those ideas are totally brilliantly adaptable to peer lessons, all of them. Yes.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a huge thing. And any type of teaching, group, classroom teaching, studio teaching, a creative activity enables every student to approach it at their ability level. So it doesn't matter if you have mixed abilities, which you always will. You will always have mixed ability levels.
Yeah.
I teach a pair of twins. They don't even progress exactly the same. So.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a really great summary, actually, Amber. I think, just going over that again, that a creative approach to teaching will allow you to be flexible when two people are in the same lesson at different abilities, because you'll go, ah, okay, well, they can do the right hand, or they can play some chords, or they're going to do the backing on the drums, or whatever it is. You can just take that flexibility. That's if you're stuck in a method book, it's like, it becomes really difficult.
It does. It's very limiting, and that was a big thing that came out. So I keep referencing this survey, but it was such an interesting insight into how teachers think, and a huge concern. Most of the comments when I ask the question, what are the barrier to you starting this type, was about the different ability levels.
What was the question?
So the question I asked teachers, what were the barriers to you trying group teaching in your studio? And most of the comments are about ability levels. Matching ability levels. And I'm like, you will never get matching ability levels. If you're waiting for that, you'll never try teaching two kids at once.
Right. But that would come about because, so we should give you listeners the background. Amber's in the middle of her master's at the moment. And so this survey was part of her master's research and it was all about group teaching. You can tell us a bit more in a moment. But I think because your survey was predominantly Australian teachers, am I right?
It was only Australian teachers.
Yeah. And because we have quite a strong exam focus here, I could totally see how if teachers are tending to teach to the exams, then that is about as in a box as you could possibly get with your teaching.
Right.
So I could see how, therefore, they would go, well, if they're not the same exam level, how could I possibly teach them together? So, well, it's great that your research is helping unpack some of those myths, I think.
It's been interesting, and I hope I can come up with some practical ideas. But the biggest thing is, it's just, like I said, creative activities totally work.
So did you get much pushback from parents when you decided to change your lesson style?
No, and actually I will go through this in a bit of detail because I think it could be really useful for people. Actually, I should also mention, ironically, why I started this. What was the catalyst? The catalyst was because I wanted to cut down on my face-to-face teaching time so I could do masters.
Right, okay. That makes sense.
I had a completely different research topic in mind. And then because I changed the lesson configurations, I saw such astounding things coming out of those lessons that became my new master's research topic.
That's brilliant. Well, I mean, that's the best research if it's practical and relevant to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm so grateful. It was actually my pedagogy mentor. Everyone should attach themselves to a super experienced, amazing teacher that you meet in person if possible. And she suggested this. Possibly one of the first teachers to teach that manner in Australia, and I'm so grateful she suggested that. So she said, well, don't teach so many one-on-one lessons, have two of them come for 45 minutes. And I was able to drop a day at one of the schools I was at for that reason, carve out time so I could actually, you know, get to uni and start studying. Anyway, so how did I do it? I emailed, I think it was about a term before I actually wanted to start. I started chatting to the kids about it, emailed all the parents with lots of positive things about, you know, why this would be great. We'd have the kids would see me for longer. We'd be able to do ensemble stuff and all the good things. Mm-hmm. The big thing that helped was that I said they only had to trial it for a semester.
Right. Great.
So it took away the fear of trying something new because they were like, oh, cool, we'll give it a go. If it doesn't work, we can go back to one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
So, very clever. Yeah, a few parents, particularly at my home studio, chose not to try it. Pretty much everybody I was teaching, because I teach at a primary school, not classroom, but piano lessons. Mm. Everybody tried it, and once the pairs and small groups were going, not one single person asked to change back.
Wow, there you go. That's a really simple but effective way to try this kind of thing out. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of teachers do ask, you know, what happens if and how do I email people and that sort of thing. So I think that's actually quite a clever way to do it. You're personally actually not jumping in the whole way, just dipping your toe in. Mm. Let's try it for a semester or a term or half a year, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we'll reassess it. And there you go.
So I didn't realize that was at the time, that's probably the thing that made it. That caused no pushback at all.
So looking at your studio in an overall mm-hmm. Way now, what's the biggest challenge you've faced in either the teaching side or the business side?
Well, just exactly what we've been talking about. When I was going back to when I was just teaching 30-minute lessons, and again, back from when I was, 17, I was like, oh, I want to be a piano teacher. And then I started teaching, you know, the 30 kids a week, one-on-one lessons, 30 minutes. Eventually I became completely miserable.
Why is that?
I knew that I wasn't giving the children the music education I wanted them to have. We were basically had time to play some scales, do some pieces, and that was see you next week. And I was incredibly frustrated. And yeah, eventually I became really miserable with my with my work. Mm. And I'm not, you know, giving them what they need to go and jam with friends and jump in an ensemble and accompany and play music for the rest of their lives. I'm not giving them those skills. And yeah, it was really sad.
And what made you realize or think to try some different ways and that you could get out of that rut?
Yes. When somebody said, try this, pretty much.
Right. What was that? Can you remember?
Yeah, no. So it was literally my mentor saying, well, don't teach like that. Try this. Try having two of them come at once.
But that was only in the last 3 years, right?
Yeah, I can't believe it. It seems so simple now that I'm doing it. And I can't believe it took me that long, really, now.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. And a more recent example of responding to community feedback was the addition of a very popular feature, streaming video and audio files directly within the My Music Staff app. And that means that no longer do you have to download files to your device. So it makes it incredibly easy to share content with your students. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today. So how long from, you say you started at 17, how long was it between then and that pivotal moment when your mentor said, why don't you try something different?
Yeah, so that was about 15 years I started teaching. So probably a good 10 years of teaching on and off, quite traditionally. Like it's, like I said, I was doing classroom music teaching.
Right.
But that didn't infiltrate into my studio.
Isn't that interesting?
Somebody said, that's why, and getting back to why the inner circle is really good and why we need to connect with others. Because we are each other's greatest resource in this very isolated industry. And I so believe that. And I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have mentors like that to push me along and try new things.
100%. But it is really difficult. I know people will be listening going, well, I want a mentor, but how do I find one? I mean, that's a real challenge. It sounds like you have been incredibly lucky.
Incredibly lucky. Well, because I've ended up living back in Canberra where I studied music. So when I moved back, I still had those connections.
Right, okay. And so your mentor, we might as well name who this person is if you're
Her name is Maritje van Wezel. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's based in Canberra, Australia.
Based in Canberra. She's in her 80s. Sorry, Maritje. WM your age. She's in her 80s. So can you imagine? That's just the knowledge that she has. Mind-boggling. And she has been, I've been trying to learn as much as I can from her.
Yeah.
I totally changed my life as a teacher.
Yeah. I was very lucky. I had a very similar experience with my childhood teacher who I reconnected with as an adult to get help when I started teaching. And she, shared with me everything that she knew basically. And that really kickstarted me. And going back to the inner circle, you mentioned it before, it's exactly why I created this community, because I know not everyone has that opportunity to find someone like that.
That's
so
right.
Let's put all of us together and let's all share our ideas. We can all be mentors to each other. And it's really interesting that really it seems like the catalyst for you was a very simple statement from this person. She didn't even probably do all that much except just go, well, why don't you try this? And that's all it takes sometimes.
Maritje, she wasn't pushy about it because she realized that this type of teaching may not work for every teacher. And she didn't, she wasn't even sure if it would work for me. So, but it did. Yay.
That's great. Really, really good. So let's talk marketing for a second. How do you keep bringing new students in and making sure that you continue to grow?
It's going to be something I'll definitely look into now. Now that I have a company,
that will talk about that in a sec too.
That will become more important. Fortunately, in Canberra, there's no shortage of teaching work, which is great. We're very fortunate. So, in terms of marketing, because I'm in at the schools, that has been a brilliant way to get lots of students, and parents really value although I do prefer teaching from my home students, parents do really value the opportunity for their kids to have their piano lesson during school hours and having it all done. So there's not yet another thing to do after school. And I respect that, although I feel, you know, home studio is best. That is a really important service and one that I'm glad to offer.
Hang on, are you talking about the school or the home service?
School, both, yep. Really.
Yeah.
So that's been really important. And through that, obviously, your name, you know, you're advertised through the school and the school newsletter and my details are up there, good old poster on the music room door. And that's where I get a lot, plus right. Word of mouth. The kids are like, I learn piano, and they tell their kids in the class and all of that. And then they want to get piano lessons as well.
So, so just to confirm, at the school, you're teaching one-on-one instrumental piano as well, or are you doing classroom at the moment?
So no, I'm not a classroom teacher at the moment.
Right, okay.
Yeah, just a studio teacher. But again, in the schools, particularly the primary school, they're all the peer lessons as well.
Right, okay. And so for teachers listening from the United States, that might be a bit of a foreign idea that students come out of lessons for one-on-one lessons during school time. It's not generally done, as far as I know anyway. It's more common in a band situation that the whole band comes together. So this is more common certainly in the United Kingdom and here in Australia. And it's the way I actually did a lot of my teaching in schools too. I'm interested to know, are you keen to get out of schools, or are you quite happy with the balance?
Probably eventually I would pull back from the schools myself. However, I've actually really enjoyed having work during the day because my husband has those typical, it's not really 9 to 5, 9 till 7, who knows? There's no typical 9 to 5 anymore, is there? But if I did the typical start at 3:30 and go till 9 o'clock at night and then taught on the weekends, we would literally never see each other. We would have completely opposing schedules.
It is a real challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. During the day.
Yeah. It's a massive advantage of teaching in a school. There's no doubt. All right. Let's talk about the company. You mentioned that you've set up a company structure, and a company over here is a little bit different to America, where you have LLCs, I believe, limited liability companies, or corporations. So tell us, why did you decide to incorporate or, you know, build a company?
The big one. I mean, obviously, as a sole, we have most teachers, studio teachers probably just operate as a sole trader business structure. And you can employ staff as a sole trader. However, if heaven forbid something goes wrong and you are found liable, fortunately it's a fairly low risk industry, but still, if you are found liable, then everything that you own in your life or your personal assets, your house, everything is at risk.
Right.
So I did that. I wouldn't have considered taking on a staff member and growing beyond just me without going to a proprietary limited company structure.
So there's a separation.
Protection there.
Right, yeah. So it means that if you're sued, then your company is sued for its assets, but your personal assets, your home and all that kind of stuff remain separate. And it's one of the reasons that I did the same thing. And I would encourage others to as they grow. I think, as you say, when you first begin, no problem being a sole trader with an ABN. We call it an Australian business number here. I'm sure there's a similar structure in other parts of the world. But you're right. That extra protection, it also forces you to separate bank accounts and make sure you've got tax audit. You might not have even had that joy yet of doing BAS statements, business activity statements.
I did for a while as a sole trader. I've gone like up and down, but yeah. It's coming back, good old bad. So I should just mention that is the big change between sole trader and company. My company is now its own separate entity, and which, you know, some people may not realize that is a thing now that's not separate from me, and I'm an employee of the company now.
Right. So,
I'm the owner, the director, an employee, the secretary, and the shareholder of one share worth $1.
That's how it all begins, right?
Yeah, I had to sign a lot of things as the accountant's office.
Accountants so love making sure you fill in all those meeting forms that you met with yourself.
I know, I hadn't signed so many things. Getting married.
But you're right. It's a really good thing to consider as you grow a studio, for sure. So are you paying yourself, you said you're paying yourself as an employee. Is that a formalized arrangement? You have...
No, I mean, I'm listed as an employee for insurance. I haven't structured a specific wage yet, mm-hmm. but that would be definitely something to do down the track.
Yep.
So, yeah, I just tend to, there is a flexibility where you can draw, I reimburse myself for all the expenses basically from the company.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
And what about insurance? Has your company got insurance?
Mm-hmm. It's really important. I don't know how much detail I should go into, but I wanted to make sure I did everything correctly, 100% correctly, and that my staff members are treated as staff members and not contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So I have proper public liability insurance and workers' compensation insurance.
Right.
So if something should happen and they get injured, they are totally covered. I am also covered being an employee. I'm also listed and covered by my workers' comp and public liability insurance and everything. Mm-hmm. I've never had that before. I've never had income protection or anything like that. And now I do, which is pretty amazing.
Now, you've mentioned one of the reasons you made this change was about hiring other teachers, but you haven't told us a huge amount about that. So have you already hired some teachers?
I have. I have a staff member.
Wow. So what does that person...
two-person company.
Well done. What does that person do for you?
So she started teaching also at the primary school I work at. I should mention I don't have a commercial premises.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes into the school and she also teaches kids. She's currently just doing one-on-one lessons because I think for a new teacher that's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she goes in there and that's going to be increasing as her availability increases, which is really exciting. And it's been great because I have not been able to keep up with demand on my own at this school. It's been crazy. So that's what prompted it partly.
Well, that's actually quite entrepreneurial because I would imagine that the other option as a teacher in a school would be to say to the school, can you hire another teacher? Cause I can't do all this.
That's right. Yeah.
But you actually went to them and said, can I find you another teacher and kind of mm-hmm. subcontract to them? Is that how it worked?
Pretty much. I just did it really.
Wow.
And I said, I'm now a two-person company. Can I update the schedule? And they're like, yeah, great. Cause they're just really pleased that I'm offering that service there.
Right. Yes. Because otherwise,
parents love it. I mean,
it's helped them out because they haven't had to hire another teacher.
Exactly.
And are you employed by the school or do you contract to them?
No, I'm not. I'm a totally independent person.
Mm-hmm.
This is different probably with a lot of other people have experienced. They don't dictate scheduling or anything. They're quite hands off with all that, which is right. suits me. Quite well.
Yeah, so it's clever. So you're a contractor. They've said to you, Amber, you're our contract piano teaching person. Run it as you wish. Schedule it, hire extra teachers. So, I mean, you could potentially hire another three teachers and then stop teaching altogether and run it as a business.
Exactly. I mean, there are some other teachers who come in there that I'm not involved with, but in terms of piano, it's all me now.
It's really interesting because I know many teachers are on contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's an employee contract. So it's like a 1 year, but I'm an employee for that year. Other times it is via an ABN. So you're working as an independent contractor in a school.
Yeah.
But I imagine very few, and I didn't consider this, would think, I'll hire some extra teachers if you need some more people. Exactly. In fact, do you need a drum teacher? I could probably find one and find
I've actually totally can do that. So down the track, I can totally see myself helping them find other people, which is good.
There is a
difference to that in how I want to run my company, which I should talk about.
Okay. Go. Well, the only other thing I was going to say then is that you could then say, once you've done this in one school,
mm-hmm.
you could set yourself up and go to another primary school, go, hey,
Absolutely.
Look at what I'm able to do.
Yes.
Have you thought of that as well?
Definitely. I mean, in some schools, they do dictate how much you can charge for lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And in my company structure, I have to be very careful about, I want to pay them properly, my teachers properly.
Mm.
And then I have all my costs on top of that.
And you've got to make some profit as well.
And I've got to actually make a tiny bit of profit, which when you're talking about, we'll talk about that later. But yeah. So I probably wouldn't be going into some schools
mm.
because of because of that. But yeah, I could definitely see myself going into more than one school. The difference, I suppose, there are certainly lots of other setups where people do this. They manage the teachers and send them out and pay them a wage.
Mm-hmm.
The difference with my company and the very much determined to do differently was continual, ongoing, thorough staff mentoring and development.
Right. And what does that look like and how do you do it?
Yeah, so far it's only one staff member. If I had more than one, I'd probably do it as a small group mentoring session. But at the moment we've been meeting, we email often, so if she has questions, we stay in touch by email and we make sure we meet at least once a month for a couple of hours. And I also go and observe her lessons and give her feedback. That's a big one, I think.
Mm, mm. Well, you can learn. I mean, I learned so much as a classroom teacher by having, I mean, it's awful
that's
and no
right.
one, but it's a bit, that's when you learn the most.
Especially with studio teachers. I mean, we are very, I think there's a bit of insecurity there. Like, am I doing the right thing? And are you going to steal my ideas? I don't know. But we don't do it.
I hope there's less of that now, but I know what you mean.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I think it's just insecurity. Like, what if you see that I'm not doing everything I should be or something? But I think we need to bust down that wall we've put up around our little individual teaching kingdoms and get more collaborative there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. So have you got plans for another teacher or maybe an admin assistant or anything like that at this stage, or are you happy just as it is for now?
Yeah, I do have an admin assistant, more of a sole, like a contractor, mm-hmm. rather than a staff member. Definitely have plans for another staff member.
Yep.
I just want to, there's no shortage of work in Canberra, so that's not my challenge, is the opportunity for growth is there, but to make sure it's sustainable and that the quality of teaching remains high. Plenty of setups where they just, here's some students and off you go, here's a teaching space. There's plenty of music schools that do that.
Mm.
I want to do something very conscious that I want to do something differently.
Right. And do you think the mentoring aspect is going to be the main point of difference in that regard, or are there other ideas?
That's going to be the main point of difference, I think, at the moment. Because I think I wouldn't expect teachers to even want to come and work for me, really, unless they were going to have an opportunity to grow and become better teachers.
Mm.
Well, it's otherwise, why wouldn't you just teach yourself? Like, you know,
yeah. Well, it's a real conundrum for music studio owners who are hiring teachers, in that we all know that you can't pay them as much as they would get themselves.
Absolutely.
So you need to convince them of the value that you'll provide them. Mm-hmm. And one of those things that you can do is provide them things like training, upskilling and growth, which they wouldn't get otherwise if they're working independently. So that's actually a really useful hiring tactic.
Yeah. And I don't expect them that they will stay with me forever. I think you have to face that reality.
Mm.
I know other studio teachers that moan about and complain that their teachers leave them. Like, of course they're going to leave you. Eventually they're going to probably go and set up their own studios. Actually, my staff member has her own studio.
Right. So, and it's going to grow probably.
That's right. She has her own studio, but she's interested being a young teacher just out of a music degree course. She's really interested in the mentoring side.
Mm. And mentoring is something that you told me you're keen to do more generally as well, not just to your own staff.
Yeah.
And you've started speaking at conferences. So this is a relatively new thing, I think, Amber, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So why have you decided to branch out like that? Because that's a big step.
Yes. Well, I think being a consummate teacher, you almost can't help it. But the big thing is that I've received such amazing help and mentorship over the years. I wouldn't be the teacher I am today without that. And it was so valuable for me that I just want to give that back to other younger teachers as well. And also, I mean, your reach as an educator, if you're then educating educators, your reach is limitless, really, which is pretty exciting.
Mm, yep. One of the main reasons that I've created
That's right.
what I've created.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can't measure that impact, really.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I'm so excited for the future for you. What else does the future hold? You know, if we could wave the magic wand and 10 years time, what are you going to be doing apart from lying on a hammock in the Bahamas?
With all my teachers out there teaching on my behalf.
Exactly. Burning your money to light your cigar.
That's right.
What are some of your bigger goals?
So really exciting. I'd like to collaborate with other pedagogues to create some resources. Not a method book, not interested in creating yet another method book.
There's a lot of them out there. There's
enough of those. I'd really like to create a very flexible resource to progress students from the very first lesson to very advanced skills. Skills that I didn't even touch upon until I got to university. Things that I think students should be learning way before they go out into the world and leave your studio, whether to study music or otherwise, in terms of understanding of musical language, chords and harmony studies and oral skills. And I could go on and on.
Well, it just so happens that I have in my hot little hands here the download that I mentioned in the introduction that Amber has so kindly offered to you guys. It's 7 pages. And this is Amber's, like, I mean, you have put so much love and attention into this. And I know it's just a draft, but tell us about it. How can teachers use the download that you've so kindly offered, and what was the goal for it?
Yeah, so it's something I've been developing for myself. And then when I suddenly got a staff member, I was like, okay, I need to put this in a format that somebody else can work through. So
I have to keep doing that every day, trust me.
That's right. So it's, I mean, having mentoring others is amazing development for yourself. Mm-hmm. It forces you to get ideas out of here into here. So yeah, so the idea is that you, particularly the first page, me and my piano, that's something to start from the very first lesson. And then the other, it's kind of in, it's in different categories. So me and my piano, keyboard orientation, rhythm and pitch. And the idea is that you just try to do one quick little activity. So even if you're only teaching a one-on-one lesson, I shouldn't say only, that's still a very valuable form of teaching, sorry.
That's okay.
If you just do just one-on-one lessons, even if they're short lessons, either is you just do one. And you, me and my piano, you do that early on, and then you rotate through all the other activities. You might do a rhythm activity one week, a pitch activity the next. And a big important one is to keep going over everything many, many, many times, many times.
I forget to do that as well. So this is for level one skills, which you've said are foundational skills for the first 3 to 6 months of piano lessons. Mm-hmm. So the great thing about this is it provides to me, you know, in the exploring I've done of it, is it provides a checklist. Not that you have to follow like a method, which, because you've said it's not, it's something you can use alongside. You could be doing no books, you could be doing something creative, you could be using a method book.
Yes.
And this is something that goes alongside, and you can check the box. Can students confidently name all their finger numbers? Check the box.
Right. And it could take 20 seconds, you know.
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah,
can
yeah.
Can they do this? Can they relax their wrist? Because some kids don't know what it feels like to relax their hand. So, right. Can they do that? And you don't know until you ask the question. Can you do this?
Yeah.
And they go,
no.
No, I can't.
Student can spell out musical alphabet words at the piano, and there's some suggestions. Check. Yes. Rhythm. They can accurately march or tap or clap to the beat while listening to various forms of tempos and meters. Check. So these are all things that you have given importance to in the first 3 to 6 months of lessons.
And again, it could, if you have an older beginner, might take 1 month.
Right.
If you have a preschooler, it might take a year. Like, it's very open-ended.
Yeah.
And the idea is you work through it as quickly as you need to.
And the other good thing is once you've finished it, you have a checklist complete of everything that's done by the student. So you actually kind of, you could even give it to the parents, or you could summarize it in a certificate or something like that.
That's the idea. And then they go, oh, wow, my kid's pretty good. Look what they can do. Which is really good. It's really, I mean, I forget. I wrote this thing and I forget to do some of them. I use these as well, and I wrote them because your brain just cannot contain all of that. I need something, you know, written out. I don't forget.
Oh, I use my own frameworks and lesson plans all the time. Oh, it's great. Particularly if you're not starting. So I have lesson plans for starting a new student or teaching an adult for the first lesson. So, I'll always grab out that checklist. I mean, there's a reason why pilots run the aircraft on checklists so they don't forget something. If it's good enough for them to keep us all alive in the sky, I figure we can do it in a piano lesson.
Definitely. And at the end, there's like a little list of suggested resources.
Great.
I didn't create all of those. I've put some links to various things, and I'll make sure I share a few of the. I've shared some of those things that I've created so that people can see what I'm talking about in terms of things like rhythm puzzles and what on earth is that. So I'll make sure that's there for everybody.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And if you're interested in downloading Amber's Studio Level 1 Skills Pack, you can head to timtolpin.com/episode146 to grab that. So, Amber, tell us where people can find out more about you and connect with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll make sure I put up some contact details because I've been so busy starting companies and studying that although I have a domain name, I don't have a website yet.
I'm
a little bit, I know, it's shocking. I'm a bit back to front, but that will happen. But I'll put some other things. So I'm a member of our local keyboard association. And I'll put some stuff up there so you can see who I am and get in touch with me.
That's great. And you can also, of course, if you're an Inner Circle member, chat with Amber in our forums. She'll be more than happy to help you there.
Love to.
So all her details and that download again will be at timtoppin.com/episode146. Amber, you're a superstar. I'm amazed by everything that you've got going on and planned for the future. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed my first behind the studio chat with Amber, and it's something that I'd like to do more of in the coming podcast seasons next year. Now, last week, I mentioned that I'll be releasing a brand new resource called 150 Creative Piano Lessons as part of my 150th podcast episode, which is coming up in just 4 weeks. This will be a physical product that I'll be sending to you featuring 150 creative business and lesson ideas for your studio, all packaged into a super easy to use format that you can plug right into your computer. Interested to find out what it is and how it all works? Well, I'm going to uncover a little bit more next week. And also keep in mind that 150th episode, as I mentioned last week, is going to be extra special because I'm inviting on about 5 or 6 guests, all part of my expert teaching panel from the Inner Circle. Can't wait to share that one with you. So next week on the podcast, we're going to be chatting all about my no-book beginner's approach for teaching beginner piano students. This is probably my most well-known pedagogy course release so far, and one of my first ones too, actually, after PianoFlix Teaching Pop Piano. So I thought I'd invite a teacher who's actually been using this approach with great success to come on the show and unpack exactly how she's using it and the changes she's seen in her teaching as a result. It's amazing to hear about these kinds of impacts. I didn't even know the depth of it when we started the interview, and I'll be sharing that next week. Until then, I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.